Morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra's Nunvav. We start today on the bottom of Nun Hamud Beis. We are starting off on the Shabbos low. We are in the middle of a discussion of establishing boundaries. Okay, the establishment of boundaries is important vis-a-vis our topic of discussion, meaning the third paragraph of Baba Basra, and that's, of course, kinyanim, when you want to acquire a property. So you acquire a property, and it's nechse hager, which means that the convert died without any family members, and the property is owned by nobody. And there are two contiguous properties, but they're separated by a border. By a patch of plants, and you do a chazaka, a proprietary act on one of the properties. You only acquire the property that you did your proprietary act on. You're not going to be acquiring the other property. The border separating the two vis-a-vis kinyan. Okay, good. That's what we said yesterday. That was in Daf Nun Hey. The Gemara says this halacha also will extend and have application towards the mitzvah of peah, and it will also have application vis-a-vis the tumah. And if you recall yesterday's daf, we went over how each one of those apply for both peah and for tumah. In the meantime, we're going to continue in the Gemara. We're going to go right to Shabbos. So the idea now that you're going to have a boundary separating borders is going to be applicable by Shabbos as well. Aval Shabbos lo. And Rava Amar Filo Linyan Shabbos. Okay, so it's not going to make any distinction vis-a-vis Shabbos. And Rava says, no, it will make a distinction vis-a-vis Shabbos. And the Gemara goes on to explain. The Tanya, we learned in the following brisa. So, without going it right now into the give and take between the Gemara and Rava, whether it does or does not apply, let's just go right into the halachas of Shabbos and we'll understand. We go into the halachas of Shabbos, so let's just recall the following basic information so that we can really appreciate the Gemara's point over here. We're talking about the Malach of Hotzah. Malach of Hotzah demands that in order to violate Shabbos on the Malach of Hotzah, Hotzah is the 39th Malach of the 39 Malachas on Shabbos, so one has to carry an object from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, or from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid. There also needs to be an Akir and Hanacha, but for our purposes right now, that's not the critical point. The critical point is that you have to go from a private domain to a public domain. A private domain is clearly defined in the Gemara and Shabbos, in those first Dapim of Shabbos, where it has to be basically an area that is circumscribed by four walls. That's Rosh Hashanah. And Rosh Hashanah also has pretty clear demarcations as well. It's got to be a street running through the city, 16 amas wide. There's a question, the Gemara never mentions this, but there's a question of whether or not I need a population of people going through the street. Okay, but in the meantime, however, Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah, those are the two areas that are recognized by the Torah. If on Shabbos I were to take an item, pick it up in Rosh Hashanah and bring it into a Rosh Hashanah, or conversely, go from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, so that's a violation of Shabbos. That's the 39th Malacha of Shabbos, and I would have successfully violated Shabbos. It's not a success that you want, but that's how you do it. Now, the Gemara over here also mentions a number of times throughout the Masechta that in order to violate the Malacha, you have to carry something which is significant. When it comes to a food, it has to be a grogerus. It has to be the volume of a fig. Other foods, not all foods have that volume. Some foods have other volumes, as per the Mishnayos and in Masechta Shabbos. But right now, for our purposes, all we need to know is that it has to be a significant amount. And for our purposes, let's call it a grogerus. So I need to carry an entire fig from a Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. What if I don't carry an entire fig? Let's say it's chatzi grogerus. So chatzi grogerus is not a malacha. You have to carry a full grogerus. What if I do it in two steps? What if I carry a chatzi grogerus followed then by another chatzi grogerus? So if I do a b'mezid, so then you're going to be chai. What if I do a bishogeg? So then if you do any malacha on Shabbos bishogeg, you have to bring a carbon chatas. So if I do chatzi grogerus and I do another chatzi grogerus, so I'm going to have to now bring a carbon chatas. All this are the ground rules. These are the basics, the basic ideas you need to know. Now, just again, more yedios. What if I took a chatzi grogerus, carried it from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah in a state of halama, being totally forgetful of the fact that today was Shabbos? It escaped my mind. It happens, we're human. And then after I did that, I remembered it was Shabbos. And then I lapsed back into my state of forgetfulness. Okay, and I took the second chatzi grogerus. So what do we say? So we have a basic principle in the Gemara Shabbos, which is that yediyah mechalekes, that the fact that I had knowledge in between those two actions, that's going to divide those two actions, and therefore I'm not going to be chayav a carbon chatas. Okay? Again, these are all the basic ideas that we need to know. And with all that in mind, let's now go into the Gemara de Tanya. So I took a chatzi grogris into Rishus HaRabim. So in other words, I transferred a half of a grogris from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, and I put it down in the Rishus HaRabim. And I took the second half, and I did it all in one state of unawareness. I forgot that today was Shabbos. So then I'm going to be liable because I have now collectively, successfully violated the Malach of Hotzah on Shabbos. Bishnei halamos pater. Now, if I do it in two halamos, like I described just a moment ago, where in between the transport of the two half grogeros, I then remember that it was Shabbos in between, I lapse back into my state of unawareness, so then you're going to be pater because the yediyah is mechalekes. That knowledge that you had in between is going to divide the two acts. So far, so good. This has nothing to do with our discussion, but this is just the groundwork in order to get to our discussion. Now, Rabbi Yossi says that if I took my two half grogers and I transported it to one Rishus HaRabim, so then I'm going to be chayv. But what if I transported it to two Rishus HaRabim? It's a little bit hard to imagine, but if I may. Right. Let's take Palmetto Park Road as an example. Now, I'm not saying Palmetto Park Road is a Rishus HaRabim, because if I were to say that, it would create problems for us here in our community. So I'm not going to say it. But let's just assume right now that if we could look at Palmetto Park Road. So you know how there's some areas of Palmetto Park Road, there's a divider. Right. If you go west of the circle. So there's a divider. So one could now imagine that basically there are two Rishus HaRabim that are running parallel with one another. If that's in fact so we now begin to appreciate Rav Yossi's point, which is that if I were to carry something from Rishus Yachid to one Rishus HaRabim, meaning a Chasi Grogris to one Rishus HaRabim, and I took the other Chasi Grogris and I took it to another Rishus HaRabim, and let's again just envision that second Rishus HaRabim is running parallel, it's just separated by something. We'll describe what that something is in just a moment, separating the two. So Rav Yossi says, not because I can explain it with any svara, with any kind of logic, but simply because you did not bring it to the same Rishus HaRabim, therefore he says you're going to be putter, you're going to be exempt. Okay, that is the shita of Rabbi Yossi. On that shita of Rabbi Yossi, now we're going to have the following discussion, which is, what is the significant divider between the two Rishus HaRabims where Rabbi Yossi says you're going to be putter? And that's where now all this is going to play back into our Gemara, into our discussion. V'amar Rabba, we're in our second line now, Nunvav Amar Alf. V'hu she'esh chiyuv chatas b'neihem. So Rabba says, do you know what is the significant divider of Rishus HaYachid? Meaning that if there was a Rishus HaYachid dividing the two Rishus HaRabims, then Rabbi Yossi would say that those two Rishus HaRabims are two separate Rishus HaRabims, and therefore bringing a Chasi Grogris into one and the Chasi Grogris into the other would not bring about a liability. Why do I need a Rishus HaYachid separating the two Rishus HaRabims? Because from the Torah standpoint, the Torah only recognizes two Rishuyos. Meaning from the Torah standpoint on Shabbos, the Torah recognizes a Rishus HaRabim and the Torah recognizes a Rishus HaYachid. Now I'm sure you've heard in the context of Shabbos something called the Carmelis. A Carmelis is a din derabbanan, it's a gzera derabbanan. The Chachamim labeled an area, which is not Rishus HaYachid, not Rishus HaRabim, as a Carmelis. But that's not a Torah-recognized area. We are talking about the division of Rishus HaRabim vis-a-vis that you don't have to bring a carbon chatas. So Rabba says the only thing that will successfully divide it is only a Rishus HaYachid, because that's the only thing the Torah recognizes. But if what separated them was a Carmelis, meaning if you have an expansive land that's neither Rishus HaYachid nor Rishus HaRabim, so then Rav Yossi will tell you that those two Rishus HaRabims are not halachically divided, and if I brought a Chatzi Grogris to each one of them, I would be liable. Abai Amar Afilu Carmelis. Abai says no. Even if the two Rishus HaRabims are divided just simply by a Carmelis is simply an expanse of land that is not a Rishus HaYachid nor Rishus HaRabim, still, it will divide the Rishus HaRabim. Ava Pisla lo, but not a Pisla. A Pisla, basically a block of wood. Or basically, I guess now I could use my example a little bit better, a divider. If I have a divider separating the two sides of the Rishus HaRabim, so that's not going to be considered a good division. What's the difference between a Carmelis and a Pisla? So the Rashbam explains. The Rashbam says, Ava Pisla lo, I'm reading the Rashbam Kigon. Chaticha Seitzo Amud, Shein Gavo Ayud, if it's a piece of wood or a pillar that is not 10 tefachim high. Now we have in the Rashbam the word Amos, but really Ein Gavoa Asara, right? Should be the word, the correct word should be Asara, and it's not Amos. It's rather should be Tvachim. The ain't right, and I've taught you this before, meaning that the word Asara is masculine, it therefore is going on Tvachim. Eser is feminine, it's going on Amos. Okay, anyway. So, Gavo Yud Tvachim, Ve'ein Rochav Dalet, and it's not four Tvachim wide. Inami, Gavo Yud Elashain Rochav Dalet, or it is 10 Tvachim high, but it's not four Tvachim wide. Have Makom Pater. What is that? It's none of the above. It's not a Rosh Hashiach, it's not a Rosh Harabim, it's not a Carmelis. A Carmelis has to be an expanse of land. And so, therefore, what is considered now, it's a Makom Pater, it's an exempted area. And on Shabbos, you are allowed, min HaTorah and even mid Rabbanan, to transfer something from a Rosh Hashiach to a Makom Pater, from a Rosh Harabim to a Makom Pater. The Gemara there, back in Shabbos, entertains the idea of going from Rosh Hashiach to a Makom Pater, from that Makom Pater to Rosh Harabim. That's not our discussion right now. All we're just simply noting is that a Makom Pater is a totally exempt area. The Afilu Midrabanan, I'm just finishing up the Rashbam. The Afilu Midrabanan, Motel Atalta Mitochel Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah Lesochel. Because it's such an exempted area, I can carry on Shabbos from the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to the Makom Pater, from a Rosh Hashanah to the Makom Pater, and converse. And basically now, this Makom Pater, such an exempted area, it becomes totally negated to the adjoining area, whether the adjoining area be a Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, either way. Like a Makom Chashav, Shodal, Tvachim, Hilkach, Lohavi, Hefse. And therefore, that's not going to be separating one Rosh Hashanah Rabbim from another Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, according to Abaye. And Rava Amar, and now we're back to the Gemara, we're the fourth line down, Rava Amar Afila Pisla. And Rava says, look, this is not a halacha of, meaning what we're talking about right now is not what is considered carrying from one area to another. We're talking about the division of a Rosh Hashanah, meaning I have two Rosh Hashanah running parallel with one another. Again, like the example I gave earlier, right? The two-way highway, or you know, a two-way street like Palmetto Park Road, and anything dividing it, even a pisla, according to Rava, is going to be considered significant vis-a-vis this particular halacha of Rav Yossi. That if I took a chatzi grogers and moved it to one, and I took another chatzi grogers and I moved it to the other side, any division in between is going to separate the two actions that I just did, and thereby absolving me from having to bring a carbon chatas. Now, v'azar Rav Latame, and now this is Rava being consistent. And now, finally, after all this information has been provided to us, now we're finally going to go full circle. Meaning, remember, what was our discussion? How any border is significant. Now we understand that what Rava meant is that any border is significant vis-a-vis this particular halacha. Dama, Rava, Rosh Hashanah, Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, getting dummy. So, Rosh Hashanah Shabbos is going to be following a line just like Rosh Hashanah Gittin, just like when it comes to parameters and domains vis-a-vis Gittin. So, and as we're going to explain, as I'm going to explain in just a moment, when it comes to get, any other boundary or border is significant. So to Shabbos, any other border or boundary is going to be significant. And again, in the limited discussion by Shabbos of dividing a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim into two sections, where if I take a Chatzi Grogers and move it to one, Chatzi Grogers to the other, I'm going to be exempt from having to bring a Karban Chatas. Okay. And that brings us all the way full circle to where we started off in this morning, where Rava says that Lagabe Shabbos, even a simple border separating two Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is going to be significant. Now the Gemara just ended up saying that when it comes to Rava's position, he's consistent because he says that whatever separates Shabbos is also going to be separate regarding Gittin. So quickly, let me give a crash course in what we're talking about vis-a-vis Gittin. This is the Gemara in Gittin. This is the eighth parak of Gittin, and the Rashbam brings us back to getting the eighth perek. Take a look at the Rashbam, where we are going to do a little bit of chazara over there. I'm reading the Rashbam. I'm reading by Masechet Gittin ba'Azarik. That's the eighth perek of Gittin. Dim hikna lo chatzir lo get. Let's say a man wants to give his wife a divorce and he wants to do what's called a kinyan chatzer, where he's going to lend to her or rent to her a courtyard. He's going to throw the get into her courtyard, and as we learned back in Gittin, the Torah says it has to be vinasam biyada, you have to put it in her hand, but it doesn't mean her physical hand, it could just simply mean put it in her domain, and that would be sufficient. You gave her, now you rented out to her the courtyard, and now you are going to throw the get into the courtyard. Now, v'nafa al ha'pisla shebechatzer. However, what happened is that the get didn't actually land in the courtyard proper. It landed in a block of wood that's in the courtyard. Eino megareshes, she is not going to be divorced. Ha'pisla makom acher hu b'ifnei atzmo. That block of wood is considered a separate area. V'eino bechal chatzer, it's not part of the chatzer proper. V'chatzer hikna la v'lo pisla. And the Gemara there tells us that when he rented out to her the place, he only rented out to her one place. Dechan makom mushal inish, rei makom aslo mushal inish. Okay, and the Rashbam goes on to explain further. But that's the basic idea, meaning anytime you have a divided area, it could be a very simple division. Meaning we're talking about a block of wood and a chatzer, but still, vis-a-vis Gittin, we learned back in Gittin in the 8th Perek, that's considered a separate entity. Here too as well. When I have two Rishos HaRabim, it's separated by a really simple border. A block of wood separating the two Rishos HaRabim. Even though that block of wood, it's not a karmelis, it's not a Rishos HaRabim, it's a makom pater, it's almost a totally non-specific area. It's a non-significant area. Nevertheless, it's going to create a division between the two Rishos HaRabim.
Okay. Does it have to be the whole, let's say this is a chotzer and the wood is right here in the middle. How does it divide it? Which way?
Right.
Does it have to go at least close it up?
I understood your point. Uh-huh. Okay, I don't know. Ein sham lo meitzav lo chotzer of mine. Okay, now, if it doesn't have a border, if it doesn't have a chatzav, remember that plant we described earlier, where the roots go straight down, so it doesn't have a border, it doesn't have a chatzav, so then what would be the halacha? So, the Gemara goes on to explain, Pirush Rav Meranus, Mishmo, so Rav Meranus explains in his name, meaning in the name of Rav Yochanan, Kol Shenikris Hashmo, so as long as that property is all unified by a name, so then you're going to be acquire that entire property. Hey Chidam, the Gemara says, I'll give you a simple example, Amar Rav Papa, Dekarle Begar Gasa Depanaya. Okay, there was a water hole, and it was called Begar Gasa Depanaya, the water hole of so-and-so. So in other words, as long as the entire area of land is under one name, and it's not called the fields of, but it's called the field of in singular form. So under those circumstances, so when you do a proprietary act to one area of that region, and it's all encompassed by the same singular name, so then you acquire the entire area. Continuing, Yosef Rav Acha bar Avia, Kamei de Rav Asi v'Yosef, Kamei Mishmei de Rav Asi bar Chanina, Chatzuva Mafsik b'Nichzei Hager. The Chatzuva, again, that's the plant that we described where the roots go straight down, so that creates a division in Nichzei Hager. So again, you have a ger who dies, and the property now is ownerless, and you want to do a proprietary act, but again, they are contiguous fields, but they are separated by the Chatzuva plant, and you do a proprietary act on one of them, you only acquire that one, not the other ones. Again, I know we went over this point before, but the Gemara is just reiterating it.
Even if
it's in the same name, right? But the chatzuva plant is going to be a division. My chatzuva, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm a Rav. Shabo techem Yoshua li Yisrael es haaretz. Okay, we discussed this back in Baba Kama. The Gemara quotes it here as well, and that is that when Yoshua made borders around the land of Israel and around the Shvatim, so he used the chatzuva plant. It was a great way of demarcating who's the boundaries of each person's land. V'am Rav Yehuda, I'm a Rav. Lamani Yoshua ella. Now, when you go through Sefer Yehoshua, so it is a catalog, meaning the first, let's say, 14 prakim are narrative, and give us some basic details of the Jews going from the Midbar into Eretz Yisrael and conquering Eretz Yisrael, and then from that point going to the end of the Sefer, I think 24 prakim in total, so basically from Perek Yedal to the end, it's a catalog. It is a this land, this land, this land. Now, is it a catalog listing all the cities in Eretz Yisrael? So our Gemara in Baba Basra tells us no, it's not. What it's cataloging are only the bordering towns. Right? And the Rashbam over here writes, I'm reading the Rashbam. His language is very good. The Rashbam writes, Kedei Laharos. In other words, basically what Yoshua wants to do is teach us the boundaries. Right? Sefer Yoshua doesn't want to teach us about every single city in Eretz Yisrael, but rather the significant cities, meaning the boundaries. Meaning you ask the question, why is Sefer Yoshua going through all the cities? Like, why is that? And the answer is, it's not. It's not going through all the cities, but rather it's going through the cities specifically to highlight what are the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, that's open for controversy. You could see it to this very day. It's clear that it's a sticking point, and that's why Sefer Yoshua is there outlining what the cities are. Tosfos points out over here, third Tosfos on the Amud, that not every city that you find in Sefer Yoshua is actually a border city, so it doesn't really fit in with our Gemara so well, but Tosfos points out even those interior cities that are mentioned in Sefer Yoshua are still there to highlight the borders between one Shevet and another Shevet. So still, the theme is consistent, the Rashbam and Tosfos say, and that is that the cities that are highlighted are bordering cities, either between Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael, or between different Shvatim. Okay, so I'm Rav Yehuda Mashmuel. Back to the Gemara. Kol Shara Hakadosh Baruch Hu LaMoshe Chayv B'Maaser. Whenever Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu was Chayv B'Maaser, meaning that remember when Moshe died, so Hakadosh Baruch Hu showed him the expanse of Eretz Yisrael, and whatever Hashem showed Moshe is now going to be Chayv B'Maaser. Lafuki Mai Lafuki Kini Kini Zikri Kadmoni. In other words, what Hashem showed Moshe was the seven Canaanite nations, and that's now Eretz Yisrael proper vis-a-vis the halachas of Trumas Maisros, and it excludes the lands of Kini Kini Zikri Kadmoni. What three lands are those? Rashbam over here points out they were promised to Avram Avinu that they are going to be part of Eretz Yisrael, but not yet. Now I know I say not yet as if, you know, when exactly is going to happen. Here, look at the Rashbam. I'm reading it inside. Chai v'maiser Deheim, sorry. The seven Canaanite nations is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe. It was promised to Avram Avinu at Bris Ben Abasarim. Eventually, when we do conquer it, it is not going to be chayv in Shumas Maisros. Kishiachzrim lanu lasi kedamer bebreishes Rabba. Inami im kivshu Yisrael mehem achrei mos Yoshua kulam peturim in a meiser. So, or the Rashbam also suggests that even if we were to conquer these lands post Yehoshua, they would not be chayv in Shumas Maisros. Dechsev hasam zar tzaras shenichmati zoslam uti hani sheni tosfu la Avraham al hashvua. Meaning, in addition to the land that was promised to Moshe Rabbeinu, in addition to that, you also have these lands which were promised to Avram Avinu. We are going to get them, but they're not chayv in Shumas Maisros. It only begs the question: what are they vis-a-vis Eretz Yisrael proper? Meaning, what kind of annexation are we looking at over here? Okay, but still, just to say Pshuto Shal HaGemara, the simple Pshat in our Gemara is that they are not Chayv and Shumas HaMaisros. That's the easiest way to say it. Now, of course, it only begs the next question, which lands are these? Okay, so there are three opinions amongst the Tanayim. Tanya, we learned in the Braisa. Rabbi Meir Omer Nafchus Arvavi Salma'a. Rabbi Yehuda Omar Harseir Amon Amoav. And Rabbi Shimon Omar Ardiscus Asya and Aspamya. Okay, so your guess is going to be better than mine in terms of what these lands actually represent. Rabbi Shimon, I'm not saying I know this to be so, because I don't, but Rabbi Shimon certainly gives us what seemingly is a very far-reaching expanse of land. Aspamya, we just discussed earlier in Baba Basra, in the third parak. Aspamya is being Spain, and Asia, again, I'm not saying I know, but certainly sounds like Asia, meaning it's going pretty far in terms of how much continent it's actually covering. Okay. In the meantime, we start the next Mishnah. Okay, next Mishnah is very exciting. This is the topic of Davar Chatzi Davar, having brothers testify about a singular event. Okay, this Mishnah is often quoted, often discussed. Extraordinarily popular Mishnah. We're in Nun Vav Amud Aleph. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. Hayushnai Me'idim Oso Sha'achla Shal Shanim V'Nimtzu Zomimim. The Mishnah over here describes the following. Again, in order, and we go now back to occupancy, right? Ownership through occupancy. I have to live on the land for 3 years together with a taina, together with no one challenging, no original owner challenging my ownership. Now, in terms of establishing that I've been there for 3 years, it's not my word alone that establishes that I've been here for the last 3 years, but I need corroboration. Testimony. Witnesses have to come and testify that I've been here for the last 3 years. Fine. So in other words, so what the Mishnah here describes is a simple case in which I have a pair of witnesses who have seen me on this land for the last 3 years. They come in to court after 3 years and they say, yes, Sugarman's been there for the last 3 years, and he claims that they don't have to claim on my behalf. I'll make the claim. I'll say that I purchased land from the original owner, and nobody protested, and now I'm going to get the land. However, the Mishnah over here describes where we now have a bit of a monkey wrench in that the witnesses that I brought forth turn out to be proven to be Edom Zomimim. And that means that two other witnesses come and said, how can these original two witnesses testify on behalf of Sugarman when meanwhile, Imanu Aisim Bamakam Ploni, you know, the last 3 years they were with us in some other country? So it's really interesting, curious, / they're lying that they testified about the occupancy of the last 3 years they were with us at the time. Now, generally speaking, we know the rule. When I have two witnesses, two different pairs of witnesses, and they are negating one another, that's what's called Edom HaMachishim Zedzeh. They are contradicting one another. Who do I believe over whom? The answer, of course, is I don't know. And so, therefore, when I have conflicting Edus, we just simply throw it out. However, Chiddush HaTorah, when the second pair of witnesses are not contradicting the testimony, but basically contradicting the witnesses themselves, how can they testify when, meanwhile, Imanu Aisim HaMachishim, complaining they were with us at the time? Now again, do we really know that the second pair of witnesses are any more honest than the first pair? Of course the answer is no, but Chiddush HaTorah, the Torah introduces us to a novel idea over here, which is that we're going to believe the second witnesses over the first witnesses, and therefore we assume that the first witnesses are lying. Furthermore, the Torah tells us in Parsha Shoftim, Perek Yates, the Torah tells us that when the first pair of witnesses were caught in the act, meaning while conspiring to take land away from somebody and award it to somebody else, you do to them what they conspired to do to the others. So in other words, over here they were looking to remove property from somebody, basically take money away from that person. So that person is going to be given his property back again. And furthermore, the witnesses who testified that this land was occupied by somebody else in the last 3 years, so they're going to now have to pay out of their own pocket to the original owner the money that they look to take away from him. That's a mouthful, but that's basically what I just described is Edom Zomimim. And the Gemara in Makos says that Edom Zomimim is a kenas. That's absolutely correct. Meaning that the person, the Marakam, the original owner, is going to get his land. And on top of that, he's also going to get the money from the Edom Zomimim as well. It's a kenas. Absolutely. So the Gemara goes on to say, V'nimsu Zomim Meshamim Lo Asakol, they pay everything. So they're going to have to pay the full value of the land that they looked to they looked to cause a loss for the original owner. Now, Shtayim B'Rishona, Shtayim B'Shniyah, V'Shtayim B'Shlishis. So let's say now we have testimony by three sets of witnesses. One set of witnesses say that I occupied their land in the land year number one. A second pair comes along and says year number two I was there. And a third pair says that year number three I was there. So now we have a total of three pairs of witnesses, six witnesses in total, and each one testifying about a particular year. And all six turn out to be Edom Zomimim. Now, first of all, in terms of the halachas of Edom Zomimim, we have a very special gzeiras hakosav, which is that they're not going to be considered Edom Zomimim until all of them are established to be Edom Zomimim. So the likelihood of this case obviously is very unlikely, but in the event that all six of them turn out to be Edom Zomimim, so now they are all going to have to pay, but considering that this is a monetary issue, they are going to be Mishashalim Beinehem. In other words, each one is going to pay a third, meaning it's not going to be the halacha where each pair is going to have to pay the full amount, but rather each pair is only going to be paying a third, because only through the combination of the testimony of each set of the witnesses, do I get the land, or I would have gotten the land had they not proven to be Edom Zomimim? But once they are now proven to be Edom Zomimim, so therefore they are going to have to pay, but only a percentage.
So is it because they contributed a third to the false testimony, or because they testified to a third of the time?
Okay.
Like if there were two sets of witnesses, one said 2 years and one said
1 year.
Good.
Right, it's a good question. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Okay. Shlosha achim echem etzarif imahem. Okay. Hare shalosh edios behin edos achas lahazama. Okay, now a fantastic halacha, and that goes like this. Let's say now I have three brothers. Now we know, as a basic rule when it comes to Eidus, is that I cannot have Krovim testify. I'll show you, Rashi. If I don't show it to you today, I'll show it to you tomorrow. Okay, I'm not going to try to keep my promises. But if not today, then tomorrow, where the Rashbam says that the reason why relatives can't testify. Now, before I start with the Rashbam, the reason why relatives can't testify is because the Torah says so. But in terms of a svara, in terms of a rationale, why that should be, so the Rashbam later on will say that we assume that when it's Krovim with the relatives, they are so interconnected with one another, two brothers really equals one person in terms of testimony. I'll show you the Rashbam either today or tomorrow. Okay, it's coming up later. Actually, it comes up in tomorrow's daf. But either way, relatives can't testify. So in other words, two brothers can't come in and say that I owe another person money. Okay, so that's not going to be testimony. However, when it comes to testifying about a person's occupancy of a property, and we need to establish that he's been there for 3 years, here's what you can do. This is very interesting. You can have three brothers, each one testifying about a separate year. So brother one is testifying about the first year, brother number two, second year, brother number three, third year, as long as the three brothers are testifying with another person. So for the 3 years, I'll have an outsider testifying with brother number one. For second year, he'll testify with brother, and the same outsider will testify with brother number two. And for the third year, the same outsider will testify with brother number three. And what we can then do is now put all these testimonies together in order to collectively establish that I've been there now for 3 years. Now think about it. I mean, obviously it's going to require a lot of thought, but think about it. I can't have brothers testifying, but in such a scenario, it's acceptable. Now the Mishnah's explanation is, it's because it's Eidos Achas, because it's really one testimony. Now if you take that Rashbam, which again we haven't seen inside yet, but if you take that Rashbam from tomorrow's daf and you introduce that Rashbam over here, it actually works out beautifully. Meaning really, what are relatives? Relatives are really all just one person in terms of testimony. So really what I have now is
one good one.
Right. I have basically a person testifying together with another on all 3 years. It happens to be that one person is actually three brothers, but each one of them is testifying about a separate year. It works. And in terms of a hazama, it's also going to be treated like one set of testimony. So that in the event that the four of them are proven to be Edom Zomimim, again, that means another pair of witnesses are coming in and saying, Iman Hayisim, but Malkum Ploni, they were really with us at the time. I don't know how they're testifying. They can't be testifying about that. And now they're proven to be Edom Zomimim. So unlike previously where we said Mishalshlin, where they're going to be divided over here, because they are treated like one entity, therefore they collectively are all going to have to be paying the full amount. And it's not going to be divided. Okay. So far, so good. We have now a Mishnah giving us the basic idea regarding testimony regarding the 3 years, the idea of what would happen if they turned out to be Edom Zomimim, and if I had separate sets of witnesses testifying about each of the years, and they were then proven to be Edom Zomimim, we're going to have them divided. And then the last point of the Mishnah, which is a tremendous chiddush, is that we can have a scenario in which relatives will be testifying about the 3 years, but again, in a very specific scenario in which each relative is testifying about a different year.
And each one pays four.
In that last scenario, how exactly is what does the Mishnah mean when it says that it's Eidos Achas LaZama?
Meaning
between, right? The brother, right? Okay, exactly how it's going to be divided, I'm not super sure. The Rashbam doesn't give very very specific details, but unlike the previous case, where, in other words, each pair of witnesses is only paying a third, here, that one guy who's testifying with all the brothers, he's going to pay half. I'll just say it simply like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Masisin de loker Rabbi Akiva. Now we're going to start with the Gemara. The Gemara points out that our mission is not going like the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Detanya, we learned the following bright summer of Yossi. Kishahalach Abba Chalafta, when my father, now he refers to his father as Abba Chalafta. Now his name was actually Chalafta. And yes, there is a discussion in terms of how can he be referring to his father by his first name. So it could be that the word Abba that he puts in front of it makes it better, makes it okay. Some say yes, some say no. Anyway, Rabbi Yossi says, Kishahalach Abba Chalafta Eitzel Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Lomo Torah. My father went to learn by Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. V'amila Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Eitzel Abba Chalafta Lomo Torah, or some have it the other way around. Either way, Amar lo ha'resha achla shana rishana bifnei shnaim, shnia bifnei shnaim, shlishas bifnei shnaim mahu. In a scenario in which you had me occupying a land for 3 years, but it has to be verified through testimony, like we said at the beginning of the Mishnah. And I have one pair testifying about the first year, and a second pair testifying about the second year, and a third pair testifying about the third year. Is that going to work out? So Amar lo harezu chazaka. So he said it works. Now we already know that because we learned our Mishnah. But again, this is now Rav Yossi detailing a dialogue, a discussion between his father and Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. And again, whoever spoke to whom, it works. Amar lo afani omer kein. So he says, good, I happen to agree with you. So now we have consensus between the father of Yossi, Chalafta, and Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, that you can take the three testimonies of the three pairs of witnesses, each one testifying about one of the 3 years, and combine them in order to create an ownership. Elish Rabbi Akiva Cholek B'davar Zeh. Shehaya Rabbi Akiva Omer Davar V'lo Chatzi Davar. Now, Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva says that when the Torah talks about testimony, the Torah says that the two witnesses are testifying about Davar. And Rabbi Akiva will tell you that in order for testimony to be good, to be acceptable, to be legally binding, the two witnesses must testify over the entire matter. And because in our case over here, the witnesses are not testifying over the entire matter, each one of them is only testifying about one of the 3 years that I need in order to establish a me owner. So therefore, it's chatzi davar. They're only testifying about a fraction of the matter, not the entire matter. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva would not agree with our ruling. And our Mishnah disagrees with Rabbi Akiva. Now, that's very good. What's not very good is the following. Chatzi davar is a thing, meaning Rabbi Kiva's right, meaning the Torah says that in order for witnesses to testify, they have to testify about an entire matter, and they cannot just testify about chatzi davar. So we all know that it works. When three pairs of witnesses are testifying, each one of them, about 1 year of my residency on this property, I can put those three testimonies together in order to create ownership. The only question left to explain is, what do we do with Rabbi Akiva's drasha of davar v'lo chatzi davar? That's a good question. That's where we're going to next. V'rabanan, hi davar v'lo chatzi davar, my avid lay. So ilem ma'ute. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the Chachamim are going to learn halacha from it, but it's going to be a little bit different. Now, basically, what we're going to do in the course of these next lines of Gemara is that we're going to be describing a scenario in which we're going to testify about someone being an adult. In order for someone to be an adult, both male and female, so you need both shanim and you need sa'aras. You need years, meaning they need to matriculate a certain number of years on this earth, for a boy 13, for a girl 12. And on top of that, they also need physical maturity. Specifically, they need sa'aras, they need hairs, two hairs in the genital area. And in order for an establishment of being adult, so you need edus. Okay, now obviously this is slightly indelicate, but we're just going to deal with it from a very clinical standpoint, and just from a very simple, straightforward. This is what is needed in order to establish godless, in order to establish being an adult, vis-a-vis halachas of onshin, punishments, and many other halachas that apply. Okay, so now, in order to establish godless, you need the verification of two sa'aros. So, Now, I'm not going to go through the specific anatomy over here. Let's just suffice to say for our purposes right now that there was visualization on one side of the genital area of one hair, and on the other side of the genital area, another hair. Okay, and again, without being very specific about the actual anatomy, it's for our purposes right now, we could just deal with it in the abstract, and it's fine. So the Gemara says, so you have one witness testifying about one hair, and another witness testifying about another hair. Hai chatzi davar v'chatzi edusi. The Gemara says, that's not even chatzi davar. Why? Because chatzi davar is when I have two witnesses testifying about half an event. That's chatzi davar. Here, I got nothing. I got one witness testifying about one hair. That's not even chatzi davar, that's chatzi edus. That's one witness in halacha, I'll say is nothing. It's not nothing. In other words, we know that in Mamanos, one witness will require the other litigant to make a shvua, but for our purposes right now, I could say it simply, one witness is nothing. It's nothing. So the Gemara says, I don't need a drasha. I have a pasuk in the Torah that tells me that one witness is nothing. So, where do we say chatzi davar is not going to work according to the Chachamim? A pair of witnesses testify to seeing a hair on one side of the genital area, and another witness verify the viewing of a hair on another side of the genital area. Where there, the Chachamim will say, that's an example of chatzi davar. And as the Rashbam explains over here, and I'm paraphrasing, as Rashbam explains over here, you see, that's chatzi davar because there, it's very possible for the one pair of witnesses to see both. And the one pair of witnesses basically didn't get a good look. And so there, I will say that such testimony is to be thrown out because I'm not going to be able to combine the two sets of witnesses on something where one set of witnesses could have seen both hairs if they just simply would have looked at both sides. Over here, what are we talking about? We're talking about years. The way years are constructed are such where I can have a pair of witnesses see year one and year two and year three at the same time. It doesn't work that way. The only way years can work is basically you can only look at years 1 year at a time. You know, time is linear. Not to get too, you know. But that's the way time operates. Time is linear, and therefore you can only have a pair of witnesses looking at 1 year at a time. So therefore, when I have one set of witnesses testifying about year one, a second about year two, and a third about year three, it's not a violation of chatzi davar simply because you cannot have one pair of witnesses looking at all three at the same time. Only by the case where we just gave one example, there could be many other examples as well, where it's possible to see both hairs at the same time, and it just happens to be that the one pair of witnesses didn't look carefully enough, that's a violation of chatzi davar. I'm Rav Yehuda. Echad omer achla chitim, ve'echad omer achla se'orim. Yeah, let's do it. Rav Yehuda says, let's say you have one witness saying that the occupier was there for 3 years, but he ate wheat. And Echad omer achla se'orim, and the other witness said he was there for the last 3 years, and he ate barley. Harizu chazaka, that works. Now, at this point in time, here's what we think. Meaning, let's go over the way Rav Nachman understood the statement of Rav Yehuda. Rav Nachman thought that what he meant by that is that not that the witnesses were confused, they weren't confused. Basically, what happened is that one witness saw the guy was planting wheat in years 1, 3, and 5, and the other witness saw the guy planting barley in years 2, 4, and 6. And he was alternating back and forth between wheat and barley. And by the way, the Rashbam over here writes, and I'm paraphrasing, the Rashbam over here writes, and I did my research, and I asked the farmers. And the farmers said, yes, that's what people do. People alternate crops from year to year, and that's good for the land. Okay, so that's the way Rav Nachman understood it. So Rav Nachman says, what are you talking about? How can that combine in order to create Shnei Chazaka, the years of Chazaka? I don't understand. One witness testifies that he saw a person eating in years 1, 3, and 5, and another witness saw him eating in years 2, 4, and 6. Again, like we said earlier, basically, if I were to just look at each testimony by themselves, that's nothing. The Rashbam points out, yes, collectively, the two witnesses are saying that the person ate there for 3 years, but I can't look at it collectively. In order to establish Shnei Chazakah, they have to be consecutive years. It can't be alternating years. So in other words, I can't just simply pick out 3 years out of the next 10 years and say, well, he was there for those 3 years, therefore he owns it. It has to be three consecutive years. So if one witness saw him on years 1, 3, and 5, and the other witness on 2, 4, and 6, they're not going to combine. So Rav Nachman says, I don't know what you're talking about. Amalei Rav Yehuda hachi hashta. So Rav Yehuda says, really, honestly, you misunderstood me. Hasan b'shasa de kamasin mar, lo kamasin mar, hacha tarvai b'chaza shasa kamasadi. Over here, you misunderstood my point. The witnesses were not testifying to alternating years, but rather, the witnesses were testifying to the same year. It just happens to be that the witnesses didn't get a good look at what grain the person was eating. That's why one witness is saying wheat and the other one saying barley. So now you'll tell me, okay, but how can I trust these witnesses if they don't know what grain he eat? And now I'll tell you, that's an understandable mistake. A person's confused between the grain of barley and the grain of wheat. So the Gemara says, okay, that's fine. Now, for us urban people, I think it's more than understandable. But even for the less urban population, meaning for the farmers out there, the Gemara says still, even in an agricultural society, it's still a fair mistake to say that one thought it was wheat, the other one thought it was barley. The Gemara says that's fine, that's acceptable. Okay, where do we stand right now in the Gemara? So let's just quickly recap. So we finished off the Gemaras today vis-a-vis a border separating lands. Again, we talked a lot in the beginning of this morning regarding Shabbos and how a border will separate lands vis-a-vis Shabbos. And then we went on to go back to the discussion of various borders separating the Nechseh Hager. Doing a proprietary act on one only acquires you that one parcel of land. Without a border, as long as the land is considered all by one name, one singular name, so then you acquire the whole land. Gemara went off on a small tangent regarding the borders mentioned in Sefer Yoshua. Well, then we went on to the big discussion of today's daf regarding combining Eidos in order to create Shnei Chazakah. We have learned together that despite the fact that Rabbi Kiva will not agree to this, because he subscribes to the Davar Velo Chatzi Davar, we learned in our mission that I can take the testimony of three different pairs of witnesses, each testifying to a different year in which I occupy the land, I can put them together in order to create Shnei Chazakah. Vis-a-vis Enim Zomimim, the Mishnah tells us that if all of them are caught to be Enim Zomimim, Mishalshalin, they're all going to have to pay a percentage of corresponding to the year that they testified. And then, we spent a lot of time also discussing today, the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Akiva regarding Davar Velo Chatzi Davar, how do they understand Chatzi Davar? So basically, in a nutshell, they'll agree in fundamental principle to the idea, but only in a case where you had a pair of witnesses who could have seen everything, and they didn't. Then they're going to agree that that's Chatzi Davar, and therefore an inadmissible testimony. But something like time, which is linear, where you cannot look at the entire thing in one instance, so then you could take various sets of witnesses, put them together in order to create... I'm done. In order to create three sets of witnesses. Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up.